Again, we enter the... Oh, that really didn't work at all.
I mean, it's just a response to you. It doesn't have to be exactly what you say.
Well, but it's not a response because I hadn't actually said...
Well, I'm greeting you. Just because you don't greet me first doesn't mean I can't greet you.
How about you take over the show?
Hey, welcome. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Lawyer.
Hey, I'm going to interrupt you for no reason, just to be a scotch.
Well, that is a reason, right? So it's not no reason. So maybe your logic
good reason.
Is not
self-defeating. Isn't the best way to reason.
I'm Catherine Rubino. That's Joe Patrice, and joined by Chris Williams. We are all from Above the Law, and this is Thinking Like a Lawyer, where we talk about the legal stories from the week that was.
Okay, that's not bad.
It's not terrible. It's not that hard what you do, Joe.
What's that?
Small talk.
We're going to have a little bit of small talk? Okay.
Did anybody do anything fun over the last week or so?
No.
Wow, okay, that was... Okay, we're just going to end this segment.
I saw the live-action adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh.
It's on Netflix. And it was interesting.
Did they successfully bend air?
One person did. And there was
that's the main character, Bob Avatar, right?
No, you're thinking of his older cousin. He died in the genocide. No. But yeah, so Aang was done well. The casting was pretty good for most of the characters. I will say, for anybody that watched the show and had King Bumi as one of their favorite characters, prepare for disappointment. They butchered my boy. But other than that, it was nice to see Iroh in the flesh, as opposed to, I guess, in the pigment, or however you would describe a animated character. But yeah, it was cool to see.
Well, I spent some time in Boston over the weekend, and it is chilly. Chilly, chilly, chilly. I kind of like living in that false spring kind of mentality where I feel like I should not have to wear a jacket, or a winter coat. I should say I should wear a jacket. I enjoy a jacket moment. The coat is where you kind of like lose me. But
that's called global warming.
Well, or in this instance, it wasn't enough warming for you.
It was pretty freaking cold. But you know, as a northern city, I suppose all the buildings I was in were very, very well heated. One may say too well heated. So I was in that awkward position of feeling like, you know, oh, I'll bust back out the sweaters, and then immediately regretting my decision.
Yeah, it's been busy around here. We've, I've been
that
running
doesn't
back
sound
and forth.
Busy. Just to be clear,
what? Yeah, it's been a very, very busy time around the Above the Law universe. I've been hopping back and forth to various conferences and stuff like that. So I've not really had much time to do anything outside of work. I hope to be able to do that in maybe a week. I will get free. That's what my calendar is currently looking like.
Fair enough. Well, that wasn't a very exciting small talk segment, but I guess we'll take it.
I mean, that's on you. You're the one leading the show.
Oh, am I officially leading it now? Well, then, perhaps we should talk about my top story of the week.
Oh, okay. Let's
and
do
also,
that.
And also, listeners, we just need y'all to share this podcast, because if this becomes the best one with Captain leading it, Joe will lose sleep. So please.
I could not be happier if
that's
what happened.
If you are petty as I am, please.
Could not be happier if that happened. Yeah. All right.
So last week, actually on Friday, so it hasn't had a ton of time yet on the website, but I think it speaks to a couple of trends in the industry that we're seeing. We got reports that a top 50 big law firm, Arnold and Porter, has decided to crack the whip when it comes to their in-office attendance policy. Not the first firm that's done that. Apparently at the firm, their policy is that you have to be in the office 50% of the time. So, you know, not on a week-by-week basis, but sort of overall, you have to be in there half of the time. And according to insiders, they found out, they did kind of a spot check to see how many attorneys were actually like living up to, you know, what they were doing, whatever. And they discovered that about 40% of the attorneys were in the office less than 25% of the time.
Oh.
So that's not what they were hoping for. Yeah. So they decided to, they're using the technology available to them to make it very clear that you absolutely have to be in the office. So attendance is going to be captured by docking your computer and logging on to the firm website, Wi-Fi rather. And, you know, if you're out of the office for some sort of justified reasons, if you're on vacation, if you're at a client's office, if you're in court, whatever, you just have to let folks know. But if you do not meet that 50% threshold, then you get emails from your practice chair, office heads, etc. And if you have continued issues with your attendance policy, that could include the loss of your remote work options entirely. It can have an impact on your evaluations, promotions, an effect on your bonus. All of those sorts of things. They've built in sort of a caveat that if there's some sort of extenuating circumstances, sure, you know, you can let folks know. But they are serious about being in the office.
I struggle with this a lot. I feel like this is one of those situations that there's not really a good way of doing this. When you start penalizing people for coming to the office, you're just alienating them. Many of these people knew that they were highly productive during the pandemic when they weren't in the office. So why mm-hmm. should they have to go back? That said, the next generation is going to only learn by having people around. So you need people to do something.
We've written about this as well. There are law firm leaders that have gone on record saying that the associate classes that started during the pandemic or, you know, otherwise during fully remote or mostly remote times are not developing as well and as quickly as they would expect. Mm-hmm. So there is a clear issue that big law is happening. Now the question, of course, is whether or not, you know, it is a mid-level associate who's been billing or a senior associate or junior partner who's been billing, whether or not it's their responsibility to train up the sort of next generation of lawyers, right? Because you don't get evaluated about your ability to sort of mentor a first year associate. You know, you get graded sort of at big law about your ability to bill. And if that's what you're doing from home, perhaps even more effectively, should you go to the office or, you know, kind of the counter? And I probably firm leadership thinks that this is true, that you, part of what your job is also is to train new lawyers,
right,
to kind of keep, because that's the firm needs that, right? Like big law is very much a kind of a burn and churn environment. The people that they hire in any given year, most of them are not going to be there in 5 years. Very, very few are going to be there in 10. So, you know, they need that kind of constant stream of educating and building up new lawyers in order to maintain the quality of their work as a firm overall. So I think it's kind of a weird position that the firm is putting associates in.
This is not the way to go about this, as far as I can tell, because there are many other firms that people can easily go to. You don't want to, like, the lateral, as you point out, the lateral churn is high enough already. Mm-hmm. Firms that set themselves up as, we are going to take away your money if you aren't here, become, you know, they're not really good targets for bringing in new laterals, and
sure,
they're good exit targets for people who are there already. The only way this is going to work is if a firm spends real time trying to think through how to bring people back to the office in an organic and positive, incentivized way. Having fun things there. Like, it's cliche, all of these like tech companies that are like, instead of giving you a raise, we put in a ping pong table. But there is something to that. The more you can have the office be seen as the sort of place that you want to go, whether there's events being set up, whether there's, you know, a free cafeteria, whether there's like those kinds of perks, aren't replacements for paying people, but they very much are reasons why somebody might choose to go to the office rather than stay at home.
I think another sort of avenue along that line is, you know, especially in city environments, you know, your sort of your New York offices, not everybody has the space or the setup that is ideal for sitting and doing tremendous amounts of work. I think investing in multiple different options for setups in the office, whether it's, you know, kneeling chairs, stand up desks, you know, those treadmill walk stations, kind of branching out the ways that you can work from the office that are potentially superior to your studio apartment that you maybe share with somebody, right? I think that, you know, making that as desirable as possible is also a way to say, like, yes, it would be nice to, I know I have to work for 10 hours on this. If I had a great chair, it would make my life better. It would make my back feel better.
Well, there's that's the argument for paying everybody less than they can't afford the one bedroom that's comfortable to work from home in. So you want to have them in.
I mean, even if they do have a comfortable environment, having multiple options at a firm, I think is a potential way to get people in, because some days, you know, you might feel like, you know, a big cozy chair. Some days you may feel like a kneeling desk, you know, and I think having options is awesome. And that is a benefit to having a large corporate space.
I've done some office tours even before the pandemic that were starting to lean into the idea of having multiple kinds of collaborative spaces, mm-hmm. not just leaning more into conference rooms and stuff like that, but having more, you know, in this corner is one of those kind of eggshell couches mm-hmm. that looks out over the city skyline. And over here we have a loungy couch area, whatever. And they were really trying to encourage people to utilize different kinds of spaces for the different needs they have. You know, we're in an era of remote connectivity that you don't need to be at a desk for somebody to call you if they need you. Like, they can ping you other ways. And if you do that, then maybe there are other ways that you can enjoy your time in the office.
Yeah, I mean, one of the advantages that an in-office has over working from home is space, mm-hmm. right? So utilizing that and thinking about that as sort of the difference maker and something that would convince people to go into the office, I think is worth their time and energy.
You know, there's a bit of a grand irony that the prevalence of online, the ability to do the work online, led to firms destroying the gorgeous libraries they used to have. Yeah. And now the library is exactly the sort of place that I think people might want to have if they were going to go into the office. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of place that you do enjoy getting lost into a little nook and cranny and sitting down and doing your work.
And I think you're 100% right that sort of just providing different options and different venues, I think, will have results for firms.
Bring back the libraries.
Yeah,
that's
like
the answer. They are. Right, so they, we're taking
take.
A bold stance.
Hot take. Anti-technology. What are they going to say about this on your technology podcast?
Law librarians are very much the tech leaders, so they would love it. As a design element, the library is indicative of the kind of architecture that you want if you want to be inviting people back. I think that's going to be our take.
I like it.
I wonder how often people at doing the PR at the firms read these emails and cringe, because I feel like it's only a matter of time before one of the firms forcing more in-person attendance becomes a long COVID hotbed. And that's one of the consequences of acting like of forcing interaction. Like, yes, you might have people who are new getting more like, you know, just touch information, but they're also touching, you know, germs and whatnot. And it's only a matter of time before something like that happens.
I mean that time happened. The people who kind of forced folks back when COVID was like a real serious thing.
COVID. I don't know if people were really aware of the effects of long COVID back then.
Sure, but I view long COVID as something where the COVID was contracted a while ago, and it's just like the continuing effects of it. The new exposure is less likely to be the issue. It's that you got it sometime before there was a vaccine, and now 4 years later, you're still suffering. I don't know. So that's something that the proximity of workspace deals with.
Well, I mean, the library, you know, like people just hanging out in the libraries and, you know, just having like comfy chairs and then not wiping down after each other. And then, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That'll be fine. Okay, cool. This is where you take us to a break, Catherine.
Oh, I forgot that I was in charge again.
Yeah, see, like, it's hard, isn't it, to, like, keep track of things.
I wouldn't say that. I was just trying to multitask. But we will see you on the other side of this break.
McDermott, Will & Emery is Vault's number one law firm for associate satisfaction 3 years running. Why? Because they're doing big law better. At McDermott, you define what your success looks like. They help you achieve it. McDermott's award-winning professional development program and hands-on mentorship propel you toward your goals, while the industry-leading wellness benefits help you feel your best so you can do your best. Want to see how your life could be better at McDermott? Head to mwe.com/above the law. Generate quality briefs, memos, and redlines in minutes with Callidus AI. You enter the case's facts, then Callidus suggests bodies of law, statutes, and precedents. You tell it if those are relevant, and Callidus generates a well-cited, well-formatted document. You can trust what went into it because you put it there. Be exceptionally productive with better outcomes using Legal's most advanced AI platform. Just 3 minutes from registration to results. Get $90 off your first 2 months. Use promo code Joe at CallidusAI.com. That's CallidusAI.com.
Okay, I am apparently still in charge then. I guess we can talk about one of your favorite repeat topics, somebody that you have spilled quite a bit of digital ink over.
Oh, yeah.
Our good friend and yours, Professor Amy Wax.
Yeah, so Amy Wax, who rose to prominence in our pages when she started writing op-eds about how white people are better. So, you know, not exactly doing a great job as a scholar.
You get credit there for the understatement of that particular.
Well, and I want to clarify this. Like the argument in her defense always is academic freedom, but it's a bogus argument, right? Because it's not as though she's writing scholarly works about anything here. Like when she was confronted by a journalist about backing up the specific, because all she's writing are op-eds in newspaper, letters to the editors kind of stuff. She's not writing, you know, journal articles and getting peer-reviewed or anything like that. She's spouting off her random thoughts and going on podcasts. And when a journalist asked her to provide any evidentiary support for some of the things she was saying, she sent them a Wikipedia site, which not exactly where academic freedom was designed to protect, I don't really think. So she started doing all that, going to white nationalism conferences, stuff like that, at which point she then started adding, speaking out of turn about her hypothesis that black students at Penn weren't actually graduating with good grades.
To be clear, she did not present it as a hypothesis. She presented it as, well, that's just true.
Right.
And only when you realize she actually didn't have access to the information in order to make that statement truth or fact that you realized, oh, this is just your racism showing.
Yes. She expanded this to talk about how law school's worse now that women go to it, and she also then expanded into a discussion that America needs fewer Asians.
Well, we always had to respect equal opportunity discriminators.
You know what? She's got a broad portfolio. Anyway, she then started inviting a known white nationalist, recognized hate group representative to campus to just chat with her class. This is the part where it finally got the university to get over their gun-shy fear of irritating people who cry academic freedom all the time and do something about it. And they've initiated an independent report, referred it to the Faculty Senate, and there was some sort of resolution to that, which she has then appealed, and that process is ongoing because, of course, they weren't able to do anything about it in a short amount of time. Fast forward, what we just learned, the new development here is we've never really known what the Faculty Senate Hearing Board suggested the punishment be that she felt the need to appeal. So, you know, you kind of thought, like, are they saying she should lose tenure or fire her or something like that? Maybe that's why she's appealing this. Actually, all that they did was suggest that she have to, her pay be docked by half for a 1 year. But otherwise, she gets to do everything else.
This says more about Penn than it does about Amy Wax.
Yeah. Remember, Penn was the school that where people forced out the president of the university for arguing that...
Too woke.
Yeah. That, you know, they didn't respect free speech or whatever. And it's like... They clearly don't care. They're keeping, they're doing everything they can to keep this person still working there, despite, look, and you could say that her random op-ed stuff is academic freedom. I don't think that's a very good argument, considering that there's no evidence behind it, and it's just, it's not peer-reviewed or anything like that. But you could argue that's a professor espousing unorthodox views that should be protected. But at the point she starts attacking the students themselves in there, sure. that is no longer an academic freedom discussion. This now becomes this is a discrimination in the workplace problem. You as the professor is gone. It is now you as the employee are violating, you're creating a hostile work environment. I don't understand why this is taking any time at all. This should have been a firing at least 3 years ago, if not five.
Yeah, but that seems unlikely to happen, given... Yeah.
So she continues to be a drag on Penn.
I just know if she gets fired, she's going to become a congresswoman. That's generally how the trajectory goes.
Well, she's not a particularly engaging speaker, so there is that.
Yeah, there's some overlap.
But she is a fundraiser. She still has up a fundraiser for the Amy Wax Legal Defense Fund, which she, on her website, claims is a tax-deductible donation, which is not how the tax code works. The tax code would not allow you to create a charitable foundation for the benefit of one person. Nonetheless, that is how she advertises it on her site.
It's not like she's a teacher of law or anything.
I have written about this. Our tax law expert columnist has written about this. This seems like an issue, but no legal entity, law enforcement entity, has yet done anything about it. So we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Well, on that happy note, we will take a quick break and see you on the other side.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Okay, and for our last story of today, we'll turn to the federal judiciary, where at least one Republican-appointed federal judge has learned that a lifetime appointment means you don't actually have to kowtow to Donald Trump anymore. Judge Reggie Walton was appointed by George Bush, both Bushes, to different positions throughout the course of his career. So very much a Republican judge, known for being tough on crime, and was sitting and sentencing somebody in one of the January 6th insurrection cases. Somebody pled guilty to two felonies, and he was sentencing them to some jail time and took that opportunity to reflect on January 6th and, you know, said that the specter of January 6th continues to haunt us and that he's worried that that continued rhetoric will have a similar impact in 2024, and also specifically called out Donald Trump's manhood. It was a weird turn of phrase, I guess, but Walton said that, you know, at least Al Gore, when he lost the 2000 election, was a man about it, because he actually conceded defeat as opposed to do all the things that Donald Trump did, which, you know... You gotta love that burst of honesty there. It was definitely a moment. I'm not sure that kind of dicta is something you want to be doing all the time, but it was definitely an enjoyable moment, I think, for a lot of a lot of us paying attention to what was going on.
He's always happy to see Donald Trump get called a sore loser in an actual court opinion.
Yeah. Well, it was not an opinion. It was what he was talking about during the sentencing phase of the case. But it was, so he said it kind of in court. But I definitely appreciated the way that he was very blunt about his feelings, not just about January 6th, but about sort of the sanctity of the process overall as we inch closer and closer to November of 2024, that a repeat of all of the disaster that happened in 2020 and early 2021 looks like it's going to happen again, right? So the more folks on the right that are calling that out as problematic, I think overall we're better off overall.
Yeah, you know, that way, yeah, it's good to know that Nikki Haley has another voter that will get her all the way up to 10.
Fair.
Like, I mean, yeah, it's a testament to how kind of broken all of this is. And I also think it's fascinating that, not that anyone has pushed him, nor would he say anything if you did, but the number of folks who are outspoken critics of the problem, like people like Bill Barr and stuff like that, whenever anyone gets them on the record, so you're going to vote for Joe Biden in this general election, they're like, well, no, I'm still gonna they'll go, this is a dangerous threat to democracy, but also I'm gonna vote for him anyway.
Well, Judge Walton did not comment,
nor do I think he would or would be appropriate, or
right. But it is interesting when you sort of look at the folks on the right that are coming out against sort of the worst parts of the Trump regime. This year is going to get interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that kind of wraps us up. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You can find us on your podcast listening service of choice. You can feel free to subscribe and give us the reviews. The stars are great and we'll take them, but written reviews help us move up the algorithm and help other people find us as a legal podcast. You can find us on the social medias. The website overall is at ATL Blog. I'm at Catherine One. Chris is at Rights for Rent. Joe is at Joseph Patrice or Joe Patrice on some of the newer social media endeavors. You can also feel free to check out other offerings from the Legal Talk Network. You can also find me on the Jabot podcast, and Joe is on that Legal Tech Journalist Roundtable that he is
close enough.
It's better than you do a lot of the time, that he is so fond of talking about. And have a good week, y'all.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson, to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.